this is Sight to the Blind. I finally found that clip of Roger Moynihan called Into the Supernatural. When I mentioned about the movie The Book of Clarence and how they believe Satan in the end will resurrect his people. That's why you saw in the end, Jesus, quote unquote, resurrecting the Book of Clarence, the character. That's what they truly teach. And now this interview, or the clip of this interview, when I saw it, is about maybe in the 70s or 80s. And Roger Moynihan was invited to be a Satanist. I don't know if it's Freemasonry, but what he talks about in this 3-hour interview, I'm only going to play a clip of it. In this 3-hour interview, he goes on about the plan Satan has for Christians, believers, and how he used Darwinism and those who wanted to give themselves or to give their souls to Satan to be used as puppets to go against everything the Most High has said in Scripture. Mind you, you don't have to take a lot of it with a grain of salt, because obviously it's in the 70s and 80s. They don't know the truth then. And he linked up with a Negro couple who were Seventh-day Adventists. So he kind of left Satanism or witchcraft, and he got involved with this couple, and he turned his life over to Christ. But like I said, take it with a grain of salt, but a lot of what he says could be added to what is actually going on in this world today.
As the band leader and came and said, good evening, and you gentlemen want a table. So you're one of the reserve people. So we sat there, and we had our favorite alcoholic beverages, you know. As we talk, the band leader says, how long have you fellas been involved with sorcery? And he chopped us a little bit. And I said, exactly what do you mean? Well, he said, you know, what you people are doing, talking to the supposed spirits of the dead. He says, this is silly.
And this man had been at the seance with you.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And he's telling you that it's silly what you've just done.
Because see, my wife, he says, goes to the seances because she gets comfort and she gets something good out of it. Good feeling out of it. And she lives for what the spirits are going to see that the future is going to be like. To me, he says, I can't bother with this stuff. He says, I want power. I go right to the source of power. And he says, how do you think that I became famous the way that I am? Well, I said, you must have had some good luck. Well, he says, there's no such thing as good luck. He says, there's either some power working for you somewhere, or you don't get ahead in this world. Not in my type of occupation. So it went from there. We got talking about spirit worship.
Did it intrigue you? Or did it make you want to find out more about what exactly he was talking about?
Yeah. So he said the supposed spirits of the dead that you're talking with are demon spirits. Your fallen angels, your beautiful beings.
Just set it out, just like
that. Oh, yeah.
It didn't make you uneasy when he said they were...
Well, you know, it shocked you a little bit, you know. Something that you first hear mentioned to you. He said, you guys have got a great future ahead of you. Because we've been told, the high priest of our society, secret society, has been told that the master has very special plans for you too.
Now, what did he mean by the master?
Satan. And we were interested to hear more about it. And he told us, he says, look, we worship spirits. We worship Lucifer and all his angels. They're just as beautiful as they did before they were cast out of heaven. He says, there was a misunderstanding in the whole thing, he says, among the inhabitants of the galaxies. And he says, our master was misunderstood. And God did not bear with him like he does with people that make mistakes today. So we're in a warfare, good against evil. And we happen to be the evil ones but we're not that bad. He says, I look at this business between the forces of good and evil. He says, you believe in one person believe in God, and everyone believes in Lucifer. It's like politics.
So the great controversy mm-hmm. is real. And you've heard someone talk about it that's on the other side.
Mm-hmm. And to these people, they are sold to the fact that Christ will not return to this planet with power and great glory. He's going to abdicate all claims to the planet, because this, the high priest once said that Christ will abdicate all claims to the planet because he knows that it is lawfully and rightfully Satan's. And at that time, he says, Lucifer, you mentioned Lucifer a lot of times, but you mentioned Satan also. He says, the master, usually they like to talk about the master will resurrect his people from the graves.
Like I said, Jesus is Lucifer, Lucifer is Jesus. It's even like that in numerology. That is why we don't call him by that name. You can call him whatever you want to call him, because I know some of you are just so offended that you have to change what you've been learned or taught through tradition all your lives. But this is the reason why they put that part in the movie. They believe in duality. That even though you are faulted, even though you are blasphemous, you did do some things right. So you're guaranteed resurrection. That is a doctrine that they're teaching. Like I said, this interview was in like the late 70s, maybe even early 70s into the 80s. And he was speaking about this. He was speaking about spirit worship. He goes in detail about different types of demons, those who are benevolent, those who are oppressive, and those who are or just warriors, and that their job is to create havoc and destruction. This is why Prince Mastema, if you read the Book of Jubilees or Jasher, talks about having these demons under his power so he can work his will on disobedience. Really didn't say work his power on people who are righteous or upright. He said people who are disobedient. This is who Noah, at the time of him coming out of the ark, noticing that his children, his seed were being oppressed by these type of ruachs. And they were running amok amongst his children, which was leading them astray. And it must have been far too many to handle for Yah said, all right, a small percentage of them can remain. Now, we don't know that number. If thousands of thousands of fallen angels or the third of angels left with Satan, it was still maybe with 10 to 15 fallen angels that made it with women. And then obviously those women had giants, Nephilim, Rephaim, and then I'm pretty sure they carried on that seed. So when they died, boom, it came unclean ruachs or demon spirits. We don't know the number of how many are truly out here right now. But we know it must have been a problem in Noah's day for Noah to complain to the Most High about these particular type of unseen deities, unseen ruachs that was leading astray man. So if you have time, it's 3 hours. You know, you don't have to watch the whole thing, but he labels it's titled different things that he is going to get into. And I think it's a good watch. I was reading Daniel 6 again this week. And what hit me was the fact that they've been trying to implement Noahide laws from the beginning. We always say there's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing new under the sun. That's truly a profound statement, because everything repeats itself. If these somewhat synagogue of Satan Jews who believe and read and follow the Talmud, which is the Babylonian Talmud, where do you think they would get most of their doctrine, their heathenism, their rituals from? They would get it from Babylon. It ain't just saying it's a Babylonian Talmud just for a cute title. If you read Daniel, when he was in captivity to the Babylonians through the Persians, They tried to do the same thing to trip him up, is to create a type of Noahide law, only for specifically Daniel. Now, if you look at this in the end times, this is why Satan is going to be pissed at us. Because in Revelation, it says, Satan will go after the remnant that guards the commandments, just much as the Persians, when they were upset at Daniel for being in a high office, tried to dethrone him or tried to remove him out of office by trying to going after his commandments through the worshiping of another god. Daniel 6:1, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent ruach was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could not find no occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the Torah of his God, or the Torah of his Elohim. That is how they're going to come at us at the end times. It's through Yah. It's through what we follow. Because people truly don't know what they follow in these religions. They don't understand that they're following sun worship, moon worship, star worship. The reason why they call them the Abrahamic religions, because at one point, if you read Jubilees and Jasher, Abraham was gazing upon the sky and thought the gods, that the Most High Yah, was the sun itself. And then he found out that the sun has its going down. So it can't be that the Most High only has power during this daytime and not at night. So then he took his worship to the moon. And he said, well, the moon disappears when the day comes. And the moon has its going down. So it can't be the all-powerful, all-knowing Most High Yah. He did the same thing with the stars. And then he reasoned with himself. He said, who I serve is greater than all of these, which he created. So he must be everything. He must be all of this. This is why they get the Abrahamic religions. It's through Abraham reasoning with himself of finding out who the Most High Yah truly is, that he wasn't just the luminaries, that he was everything. And then, of course, Yah had to teach him and learn him about who he was and his statutes and his ordinances. And had to go through certain trials and tribulations to be proven, to be called a friend of Yah. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes and the counselors and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any Elohi or man for 30 days, save of you, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. So this is somewhat like the Noahide laws, where you can't just worship any gods you want to. That idol worship is bad. So all they're doing is creating a doctrine that they got from the Babylons and trying to make it about the Most High God, but it's about their god, Satan. And the only way they can trap some of us is through what? Our ordinances. So if they make Sunday worship, which is what Roger Murnau talked about in that interview, is that they were going to make the importance of Sunday worship. So Sunday is going to be Shabbat. Sunday is going to be the high holy day in the beast system. It could be. Because we know that the Roman Catholic Church is the head of these particular type of laws is going to be implemented everywhere. I don't think the Babylonian Talmud or the Noahide laws actually even care about Sunday worship. But it's the Roman Catholic Church is going to imprint upon everybody else through the merging of these religions that Sunday worship is in fact in honor of the sun god or Lucifer. Then answered they and said before the king that Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Yehuda, regards not you, O king, nor the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition 3 times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men assembled unto the king and said unto the king, Know, O king, that the law of the Medi and Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king established may be changed. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him in the den of lions. Now the king spoke and said unto Daniel, Your Elohai, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. Skipping down to 23. Then was the king exceedingly glad for him and commanded they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no matter of hurt was found upon him because he believed in his Elohai. So Daniel said, Nothing has happened to me. After Darius fasted all night, couldn't sleep, he wanted to see if Daniel was still alive. Mind you, he was still much appreciative of Daniel because of the dreams and the visions that were told to him, and also the fact that Daniel was righteous. So he knew him in himself that I'm about to throw a righteous man, truly a righteous and smart man, to the lions while I'm ruled, or have people rule in my kingdom who are fools and are not of the same stock as Daniel. So I'm pretty sure there's a reason why he couldn't sleep that night. So he was glad to finally take him up out of the den. And the king commanded, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, their women, and the lions had the mastery of them and broke all their bones in pieces before they came at the bottom of the den. Now, why do you think that the king not only took the men that accused Daniel, but their children and their women? Why do you think that? Why do you think also why the Most High said to Saul that he wanted all of the Amalekites killed? Livestock, women, children. Because you have to stifle, in that time, the seed of revenge. You have to stifle the seed of revenge. Even King Darius knew, if I allowed these children, which I'm pretty sure had sons or daughters, these women, and we know how petty and catty women can be when they're hurt. That term or that phrase, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, ain't just a phrase for no reason. The reason why they had to stifle that seed of revenge is because those children, those women, could mate with other men or raise up men that would be upset at the king and would want to either assassinate the king or go after not only Daniel and his family, but all of the Israelites. And so the Most High was looking out for Daniel, or being found favor for Daniel. Like I said in this episode, favor is not fair. Favor is not fair. And this is what is the true meaning of no weapon formed against you shall prosper. And this is the heritage of the saints or the servants that follow Yahuwah. This is where that phrase comes from. Is the Most High finding favor or showing us favor in the midst of our enemies by us truly just following him? We have never received protection when we get a lot of money. We have never gotten protection when we get promotions at work. We've never gotten a lot of protections when we've done something great or good in this system. Abraham didn't work a 9-to-5. Jacob, he worked for his family. He worked for his uncle for a particular purpose after already being robbed by his brother Esau. But he was found favor and got abundance and wealth, just like Abraham, just like Isaac, because they were found favorable through their uprightness and righteousness. This is what you could take to your job when you go into your job and you have problems with bosses or problem with coworkers. That through your righteousness, eventually, you will be favorable to those who are trying to slight you at work or slight you in your business. Like Jasher 28, 12-14, and Yahuwah caused Yitzchak, Isaac, to find favor in the sight of Abimelech and in the sight of all his subjects, and Abimelech acted well with Isaac, for Abimelech remembered the oath and the covenant that existed between his father and Abraham. And Abimelech said unto Yitzchak, behold, the whole earth is before you. Dwell wherever it may seem good in your sight until you shall return to your land. And Abimelech gave Yitzchak fields and vineyards and the best part of the land of Gerar to sow and reap and eat the fruits of the ground until the days of the famine should have passed by. The key, Yahuwah caused Yitzchak to find favor in the sight of Abimelech. Now, how does Yahuwah cause Yitzchak? Not cause Abimelech, but cause Yitzchak to find favor, because Yitzchak was righteous, humble, and upright. And through that Ruach that hasn't been given yet, but through that Ruach Yahuwah given unto Isaac, given unto Yitzchak, he's able to do exactly what the Most High commanded or entrusted upon him. And Yitzchak sowed in that land and received 100-fold in the same year, and Yahuwah blessed him. Jubilees 40, verses 5 through 8. And Yahuwah gave Yosef favor and mercy in the eyes of Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, we shall not find such a wise and discreet man as this man, for the Ruach Yahuwah is with him. And he appointed him the second in all his kingdom, and gave him authority over all Mizraim, and caused him to ride in the second chariot of Pharaoh. And he clothed him with Bises garments, and he put a gold chain upon his neck, and a herald proclaimed before him, El, El, was Avier, and placed a ring on his hand, and made him ruler over all his house, and magnified him, and said unto him, only on the throne shall I be greater than you. And Yosef ruled over all the land of Mizraim, and the princes of Pharaoh, and all his servants, and all who did the king's business loved him. For he walked in uprightness, for he has without pride and arrogance, and he had no respect of persons, and did not accept gifts, but he judged in uprightness all the people of the land. It becomes a repetitive story that where have we gone to serve as slaves or serve as servants? We have already always exalted, or we were always being exalted in high places of office to look after our nation. Yosef going to Egypt in a time of famine to save his family. Moshe going to the kingdom of Cush, being a king over the Cush, being a king over the Cushites, so he could learn to be a leader, learn to be a king before he was given a real task of freeing his people from bondage. Daniel rising up to almost a president of Babylon. I mean, it plays out over and over again, except when we get to this last captivity, they figured out a way to stifle that, was to funnel us into these Greek organizations and then pick from there, us being already drenched in idolatry, religion, and now Masonic doctrine. So they funneled this purposely through the college system, through these Greek organizations, and convinced us that these were black-owned organizations, that we're separate from everything, and we were just here for the betterment of our people. And then the higher office that we would go, we would have no power. We would do what the enemy wants us to do. I think this is what Satan finally understood. He's like, everywhere the Most High sends these people, they have exalted themselves enough to protect themselves through the changing or the statutes of laws concerning them. So this is the reason why we went into captivity and we weren't beaten and trodden down like we were in this country. This is why Satan caught on to that. He's like, all right, no, this time he's gonna truly turn his back on them, and he's not gonna pay attention to them. So now I'm gonna make sure that they'll never rise in office. And if they rise in office, I will make sure that I control them like a control opposition. Like I said, if you step back and actually see this world for what it is and you see how it works, you could pretty much understand who has the true power and why things happened. It has nothing to do with race. It has nothing to do with color. It has everything to do with what they said about principalities, doctrines, and wickedness in high places. And there's nothing higher than Satan in these particular doctrines, as I'm mentioning. Jasher 70:40. Moshe was in the king's house going out and coming in. Yahuwah gave him favor in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants and in the eyes of all the people of Mizraim. And they loved Moshe exceedingly. So imagine, Moshe is supposed to be the enemy of Pharaoh. He's trying to free his people. So imagine you have an enemy coming towards you whenever he felt like it. Wouldn't you think you would have the power to be like, I want to stop this person from coming up into my house? Because if I accept him coming up in my house or coming whenever he wants to, it'll look like all my enemies can just come up and run up in my house and meet with me anytime I want. But this was achievable only because the Most High gave him favor in the eyes of Pharaoh. Yahuwah granted Moshe in Jasher 73:3, Yahuwah granted Moshe favor and grace in the eyes of all the children of Cush. And the children of Cush loved him exceedingly, so Moshe was favored by Yahuwah and by men. And this backs up Proverbs 16:7. When a man's ways please Yahuwah, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. When a man's ways please Yahuwah, he makes even his enemies be at peace with him. Now, what are these ways? The ancient paths, the ancient ways that is talked about in Yirmiyahu 6:15-19. Were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? No, they were not at all ashamed. Neither could they blush. Therefore, they shall fall among them that fall at the time that I visit them. They shall be cast down, says Yahuwah. Thus says Yahuwah, stand ye in the ways and see, and ask for the ancient paths, where is the good way, and walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls. Stand ye in the ways and see, and ask for the ancient paths. So this is the verse that really took me into doing all of the ancient feast days, the ancient new moons, the ancient fasts, the ancient days of remembrance. That is why I'm turning back. If any of you are old school or old, have old souls, this should be easy for you. Now, mind you, I'm not taking nothing away from the New Testament. But the reason why people gravitate to the New Testament, because it seems through doctrine and through tradition and through religion that everything was taken care of so you don't have to do absolutely nothing. Even though you keep saying faith without works is dead, it still doesn't click to them, because there's no ancient paths being laid out in the New Testament. And I hate to categorize the scriptures as old and new, but for those who are still babes in this walk, I have to say it this way. There is no statutes or commandments. It just says in the book of John numerous times that guard the commandments, guard the commandments. And Yahusha has said, loving Yahuwah with all your mind, with all your heart, and with all your soul is the first great commandment. And the second is love thy neighbor. That is about as far as people go. Especially in tradition and religion, they think that Jesus or Yahusha is the Most High God. So they think by just doing the second commandment, they're doing the first. It's almost like an algorithm. Remember the movie iRobot? When they had the three laws, and the three laws couldn't contradict each other, but somehow this AI robot found a way to manipulate the meaning of it, which meant freedoms had to be removed, humans had to, in order to protect humans, they had to lose their security or lose their freedoms. This is almost what religion is and their understanding of what Garden Commandments is and love thy neighbor. If you go deeper into the ancient paths, you will find the ancient ways of Yah. But just as I'm talking about new moons and feast, new moons and new moon Shabbats now, and this new calendar, it's being met with the same type of attitude that Israelites had at that time, where it says that ye shall find rest for your souls for doing the ancient way, but they said, we will not walk therein. Also, I set watchmen over you, saying, hearken to the sound of the shofar. But they said, we will not hearken. Therefore, hear ye, nations, and know, O assembly, what is among them. Hear, O earth, behold, I will bring evil upon this people, even the fruit of their thoughts, because they have not hearkened unto my words, nor to my Torah, but rejected it. I've seen brothers already rejected the Torah because they've gone back to Friday and Saturday Shabbats because it's easy and comfortable. And that's after we've gone through multiple calendars and now people are just giving up, like, all right, I'm just not going to do this anymore. I'm just going to go back to what's normal and comfortable for me and then let it be that. I couldn't cease and just say, you know what? I'm going back to Friday and Saturday Shabbats. I'm going back to doing what Judaic tradition is doing. I couldn't do that. I wanted to go further and eventually get it right. Some people just don't have the ruach to be like, okay, I got to stop what I'm doing. Let me reevaluate and then let me see what's what and go into the truth. Some people just don't want to do that, which is not surprising because, like it says, there's nothing new under the sun. So what we're doing or what we are going against or going for has already happened multiple times in scripture, which is most high. Why is the Most High always sighing when it comes to the Israelites? Jeremiah 18, because my people have forgotten me, they have burned incense to vanity and they have caused them to stumble in their ways from the ancient paths, to walk in paths in a way not cast up, to make their land desolate and a perpetual hissing. Everyone that passes thereby shall be astonished and wag his head. I will scatter them as with an east wind before the enemy. I will show them the back and not the face in the day of their calamity. When the Most High turns his back on us, you saw what happened to us was from turning his back on us. So it is truly amazing when you look at it a different perspective. That the easiest way to find favor in the Most High's eyes is to do his commandments and do his statutes and do his Torah as the best you can. Always pushing forward, always seeking. Because when you do that, he will free up time for you to do all that he has asked you to do. This place shouldn't be much of a burden after coming out of the curses. Or if you're a Gentile, this place should not be as much as a burden to you now as it is for the others. Because right now I've seen a lot of videos on TikTok and social media of people complaining that they have to work 9 to 5s, complaining that they don't like this system, complaining that this isn't the right way. And I would feel like if you would just be obedient to Yah and place him above your job, place him above your household, he will make your life easier because he knows that he desires worship just like any other entity that people give honor, glory, and worship to that they think deserves. That won't save them, that won't protect them, that won't provide for them. The Most High likes followers. He likes servants. When have you seen anywhere in scripture that the Most High took a servant that is doing everything that they're supposed to do, and it's like, you know what? Nah, I'm going to allow you to suffer through this world so that your mind and your ruach is alienated from him if you're truly trying to search and seek him. I have not read it. Now, mind you, there are examples of people having to go down by being obedient with the Torah, but that's for their own glory, for us to tell their story to show how that the Most High doesn't have any respect to persons, but will, I'm sure, be taken care of these particular type of servants, these particular type of characters mentioned in scripture, far better than we could ever hope for in this world. One of those examples is in 4 Maccabees chapter 5, about a priest and a lawyer named Eleazar. I'll start at the first verse. The tyrant Antiochus, which is the Grecians coming down into Jerusalem to destroy it, therefore, sitting in public state with his assessors upon a certain lofty place, with his armed troops standing in a circle around him, commanded his spear bearers to seize every one of the Hebrews and to compel them to taste swine's flesh and things offered to idols. This, again, is the reason why people need to read these books, particularly Maccabees, when it comes to unclean foods. I don't care with what Paul said. And I think people are taking Paul's words out of context when he said nothing is cursed if it's prayed for or prayed over righteously, that the Most High will forgive you and eat unclean foods. And the reason why people still continue to call him Jesus is because they don't understand that is a Grecian name and that it was the Greeks that came down and trashed and destroyed Yahuwah's temple. Why would he, through destruction of his own temple, have a son with the name of a nation that destroyed his people and destroyed his Torah and tried to whitewash it at the same time? Why would he allow that? Why would he allow you to keep calling his son Jesus? That makes no sense to me, but people who are only attached to the New Testament don't want to read these books because they feel like if I read them, I would have to change my character. I would have to change something because it doesn't go in with the first two commandments because everything is done away with. The old ways don't matter anymore. So why would I need to go back and read something old? It ain't got Jesus in it, so why am I going to read it? And that's usually the attitude of people who only stuck to the New Testament. And should any of them be unwilling to eat the accursed food, they were to be tortured on the wheel and so killed. Like I said, why would his son have a Grecian name attributed to a people who are about to use a torture wheel to torture people for not eating pork? And when many had been seized, a foremost man of the assembly, a Hebrew by name Eleazar, a priest by family, a profession, a lawyer, and advanced in years, and for this reason known to many of the king's followers, was brought near to him. And Antiochus, seeing him, said, I will counsel you, old man, before your tortures begin, to taste the swine's flesh and save your life, for I feel respect for your age and gray head, which since you had so long, you appeared to be no philosopher and retaining the superstition of the Yehudim. Bro, imagine the entire world stop and you're ruling. You the king, the entire world got to stop until you see Hebrews taste pork. Which is funny to me. And I'm mentioning the whole incident up in Dearborn, Michigan, where Jacob Lang, which pretended to be a Christian. He's from out of Florida. He lives in West Palm. And he's trying to give Marco Rubio a run for his money or run for his seat. He ended up in Dearborn, Michigan at a town hall meeting talking about America is for Americans and Jesus is king. Jesus is king. And like I said before, in numerology, Jesus is king. That phrase, even Christ is king, and that those two phrases equal 33 Chaldean, and Chaldean is Babylonian numerology. Come to find out that Jake Lang is Jewish through his mother's side, and this is how they know that they're Jewish, is through the mother, it's not through the father, which is should be quite evident who the real children are, since we go by our father's bloodline in the Book of Numbers. Literally the first verse of Book of Numbers talks about being ordered by the house of our fathers, not the house of our mothers. But Jews go by the house of their mothers. So he's Jewish, and he's pretending to be a Christian to stoke all types of chaos and unrest. It's always them. And I think, I'm just going to say the race, white men in this country, regardless, you know, excluding the proselytes, white men in this country don't know how to turn their anger towards anything else but people of color. So that's why Christian, white Christian men are going hard after Muslims, because they know Muslims don't really have no power. You can go on and on and on and on about immigration and these people taking up food stamps and taking up EBT and taking up SNAP benefits. You can go on and on and on. But at the end of the day, they have no power. None. I told you that Representative Ian Omar was going to come back up because she's Muslim. Sure enough, she's already in the news again. They keep repeating. They keep repeating these same narratives with these same characters. They don't change. You would think there were other Muslim or Islamic politicians in the government right now other than her to have a voice in this matter, but they will never show you those voices because they are not managed. They only show you those who are managed. So right now they're trying to get all white Christians to direct their energy to Muslims and immigrants, to brown people, basically. And that's why if you listen to A.B. Finkelstein's interview when he talks about fusing babies and children and human meat with fast food, they talk about the white men being cowards. They can't stand Gentile white men for some reason. Even though they, as proselytes, are white too, they can't stand white Christians or white men in general. I don't know why. I truly don't know why. They're the ones that's helping them with their purpose. They're the ones that they need to use to make sure all their doctrines get signed and get accepted by the public. But they have such a disdain for white Gentile men. And white Gentile men or white Christians fall for it. And they know that they don't want to be hit with anti-Semitic labels, so they don't say anything against Jews. This is the reason why you're seeing so much Jewish stuff on your timeline or in your FYP. It's all a trap. It's to get everyone comfortable with anti-Semitism. They have already signed laws, just like the Noah had laws. They have already signed laws to combat anti-Semitism. They did it in Trump's presidency, and I think they did it in Biden somewhere. But they've already written the doctrines. They're just waiting for everybody to go into this trap to freely talk amongst themselves about being anti-Semites, being proud to be called anti-Semites. Then that hammer is going to come down just like it came down on QAnon. When QAnon was at the point of it not going anywhere, anyone who kept using the same slogan or the tagline, where we go one, we go all, anybody had that in their hashtags, their pages were removed. They're going to do the same thing online. Mind you, they're going to do it in the physical sense because these people don't have that power. They can do it online because who they worship is the prince and power of the air, the Wi-Fi. So, of course, they're going to remove the truth off of that because that's his children. That's his people. That's Satan's people. So he's not going to allow being the father of lies. He's not going to allow the truth on these platforms much longer. But anyway, going back to the story. For where since nature has conferred upon the most excellent flesh of this animal, do you loathe it? It seems senseless not to enjoy what is pleasant, yet not disgraceful, and from notions of sinfulness to reject the boons of nature. This is exactly what Paul was saying almost. Saying that nothing should be withheld, nothing is cursed, nothing is unclean if it's prayed over. He's saying it almost the same way that this Grecian king has been trying to get Eleazar to eat swine's flesh. And you will be acting, I think, still more sensibly if you follow vain conceits about the truth. And you will, moreover, be despising me to your own punishment. Will you not awake from your trifling philosophy and give up the folly of your notions and remaining and regaining understanding worthy of your age, searching to the truth of an expedient course? And reverencing my kindly admonition, having pity upon your own years, for bear in mind that if there be any power which watches over this faith of yours, it will pardon you for all transgressions of the Torah, which you commit through compulsion. While the tyrant incited him in this manner to eating of swine's flesh, which is against the Torah, Eliezer begged permission to speak. And having receiving power to speak, he began thus to deliver himself. We, O Antiochus, who are persuaded that we live under a divine Torah, consider no compulsion to be so forcible as obedience to that Torah. Wherefore, we consider that we ought not any point to transgress the Torah. I read that again. Wherefore, we consider that we ought not in any point to transgress the Torah. And indeed, were our Torah, as you suppose, not truly divine, and if we wrongly think it divine, we should have no right, even in that case, to destroy our sense of the faith. Think not eating the unclean then a trifling offense, for the transgression of the Torah, whether in small or great matters, is of equal moment. For in either case of the Torah is equally cited. But you deride our philosophy as though we lived irrationally in it. This is people who, when you bring up, oh, we got to do the Torah, and the first thing they jump to is, oh, you're really doing 613 laws? Yet it instructs us in temperance, so that we are superior to all pleasures and lusts. This is the whole point of the Torah, moderation. If you look at it as moderation, and rather than looking at it as another set of laws that you need to follow, like you're following man's laws, but some of you follow man's laws subconsciously. We know it's not good to steal. We know it's not good to murder. We know it's not good to defraud. We know it's not good to do those things because you will go to jail for them if you're caught. We have no problem obeying those laws. But some reason when you bring up the Torah, it's like, oh, we got to go do this. Why we have to do it? Like, it's already been nailed to the cross. Yet it instructs us in temperance, so that we are superior to all pleasures and lusts, and it exercises us in manliness, so that we cheerfully undergo every grievance. Now I'm going to say this to add to the story. I recently got scammed. I usually been good at finding scams or looking at scams, like, and knowing they're scams. And I'm talking about when it comes to, like, when you get those text messages that, oh, did you buy this? Or like the toll ones you used to get. Remember you used to get, like, I feel like you got like 6 or 7 text messages a month about the tolls, like you got to pay your tolls. And you would know that it was from a foreign number because it would have like the plus sign, a 2-digit number, and then like a whole row of digits. And I was like, this is fake. Like, I know this was fake. It was just recently I got caught. After all the scams I've been seeing and kind of brushing by or deleting the messages, for some reason, I got caught. So somebody sent a text message to me the same way Bank of America would send a fraud alert text message, even with the little image of Bank of America in the text. It said that, oh, did you pay for something in Walmart in Orlando? About like $1,000, and did you pay for anything in Best Buy that was like a $95? I was like, no. And he's like, all right, we have to reach out to you because your card may be compromised. So I picked up the phone. Guy sounded legit, gave me his credentials, what I thought was his credentials, case number, everything. So I'm talking, blah, blah, blah. He's like, yeah, I think I'm, you know, my car may be compromised. I may have used it as a gas station, and they scanned it and took a copy of it and just went shopping. He's like, oh, what we have to do, we have to make you a recovery account because we don't know if they have access to your bank accounts. So me, I'm like, oh, this must be serious. I mean, the dude's voice was smooth with it. It wasn't shaky. It wasn't coming across as if it was a scam. It was like, oh, okay, I got to do something about this. So I was like, all right, what do I do? He's like, oh, you have to take this money and move it into this account. This is your recovery account because we don't want anything missing. We have to shut down the accounts so we can see if any other fraud has been going on, and then we can prosecute these people at the extent of the law by finding out their IP addresses. So I'm thinking this is pretty much legit. This whole spiel he's giving me made me buy into it, is what I'm saying. So it wasn't until the next day when I've already moved all my money into this fake account that I got scammed. I got scammed. My mind was elsewhere and I got scammed. I woke up, was like, hold up. I said, my account is on an overdrawn. So how is my account overdrawn if the accounts are locked down? So nothing should be going in or out of it. And he kept, then that's when I called him. He kept stuttering. He said, oh, you got to go into the bank, sir. You got to go into the branch. You got to go into the branch. You got to go into the branch. I was like, nah, this ain't right. I said, and the fact that I text him on the same number that usually showed like a green bubble, which you can't have a normal conversation through a Bank of America alert. When it went blue, that's like, damn, I got caught. I was like, I got caught. So it was a substantial amount of money. But like I said, I cheerfully undergo that grievance. Because one, I should have paid attention more because my Ruach was off a day before the incident happened. And I should have went and prayed and asked, why am I feeling this way? I just, in the heat of the moment, you never think of those things. Because you think, okay, I never have to go through trials or tribulations or these type of scams and or alerts. Like, you would think, like, you just got too comfortable. I got too comfortable thinking that whatever is going to be exposed is going to come to me naturally and I won't fall for it. But it comes that you fall for some things sometimes. So I cheerfully undergo that grievance. Now, anything that I lose will be given back to me. That is what I do know from the Most High Yah. Anything I have lost, that I lost in my righteousness, that I didn't lose because of sin or didn't lose because of punishment, it will be given back to me in due time. So I'm not even worried about that. Because it says in verse 23, and it instructs us in justice so that in all our dealings we render what is due. And it teaches us piety so that we worship the only one, the one and only Elohim becomingly. Wherefore, it is that we eat not the unclean, for believing that the Torah was established by Elohim, we are convinced that the creator of the world in giving his Torah sympathizes with our nature. So I know I'm going to get back and more because our nature is to follow and be obedient to the Most High Yah. Just like Jacob was stolen from. Jacob was stolen from by his own brother. You would think that the Most High would not allow Esau, who was wicked and unrighteous, steal anything from somebody he deemed upright and has chosen. But it happened all the same. But it was all to the Most High's purpose. He's like, where I'm going, where I'm taking you, you're going to have more than what your brother just stole from you. But it will be yours. It won't be what your father has handed down to you. It will be yours. It'd be something you worked for. So by the time Jacob was ready to leave Laban, his uncle, he left with four women. He left with children. He left with cattle and livestock. He left with more, enough for he was going to give a portion of it to his own brother. For a bribe, basically. That's how much abundance the Most High gave Yaakov or Yashrael, because he was upright and upright only. He didn't have to do anything outside of that to make him more special. He didn't have to be clever. He didn't have to be smart. He didn't have to be all knowing, all wise. He just had to be obedient and upright. So like he says in this verse, it's the Most High sympathizes with our nature because he knows we're trying to wholeheartedly follow him. Those things which are convenient to our souls, he has directed us to eat. But those which are repugnant to them, he has interdicted. But tyrant-like, you not only force us to break the Torah, but also to eat, that you may ridicule us as we thus profanely eat. But you shall not have this cause of laughter against me, nor will I transgress the sacred oaths of my forefathers to guard the Torah. No, not if you pluck out my eyes and consume my entrails. I am not so old and void of manliness, but that my rational powers are youthful in the defense of my faith. Now then, prepare your wheels and kindle a fiercer flame. I will not so compassionately in my old age as on my account break the Torah of my country. I will not belie you, O Torah, my instructor, or forsake you, O beloved temperance. So, if the laws are done away with, these books would not make any sense. If these statutes, these ordinances are nailed to the cross, these books and this man's sacrifice for the Torah would not be in these books. I will not put you to shame, O philosopher, reason, or deny you, O honored priesthood and science of the Torah. Mouth, you shall not pollute my old age, nor the full stature of a perfect life. My father shall receive me pure, not having quailed before your compulsion, though unto death. For over the wicked you shall tyrannize, but you shall not lord it over my thoughts about the faith, either by your arguments or through deeds. When Eleazar had in this manner answered the exhortations of the tyrant, the spear bearers came up and rudely haled Eleazar to the instrument of torture. And first they stripped the old man, adorned as he was with comeliness of piety. Then, tying back his arms and hands, they disdainfully used him with stripes. So they beat him, whipped him. A herald opposite crying out, "Obey the commands of the king." But Eleazar, the high-minded and truly noble, as one tortured in a dream, regarded it not at all. But raising his eyes on high to heaven, the old man's flesh was stripped off by the scourges, and his blood streamed down, and his sides were pierced through. And falling upon the ground, from his body having no power to support the pains, he yet kept his reasoning upright and unbending. Then one of the harsh spear-bearers leaped upon his belly as he was falling to force him upright. But he endured the pains and despised the cruelty and preserved through the indignities. And like a noble athlete, the old man, when struck, vanquished his torturers. His countenance sweating and his panting for breath, he was admired by the very torturers for his courage. Wherefore, partly in pity for his old age, partly from the sympathy of acquaintance, and partly in admiration of his endurance, some of the attendants of the king said, "Why do you unreasonably destroy yourself, O Eleazar, with these miseries? We will bring you some meat cooked by yourself, and do you save yourself by pretending that you have eaten swine's flesh?" They feel so sorry for this man. They want him to give him fake food beyond meat and have him pretend that it's pork. That's like trying to give you turkey bacon and be like, yeah, just imagine that it's pork. And Eleazar, as though the advice more painfully tortured him, cried out, "Let not us who are children of Abraham be so evil advised by as by giving way to make use of an unbecoming pretense. For if it were irrational, if having lived up to old age in all truth and having scrupulously guarded our character for it, we should now turn back, and ourselves should become a pattern of impiety to the young, as being an example of pollution eating. It would be disgraceful if we should live on some short time, and that scorned by all men for cowardice. It be condemned by the tyrant for unmanliness by not contending to the death of our divine Torah." Like I said, the Noahide laws, following the beast, worshiping the beast, they are going to try us because we are not cowards like the rest of the world is going to be. I'm talking about all religions. This is why the Most High has set us apart early, so we can go through these trials and tribulations for the major trials and tribulations to come. So our ruach and our bodies and our minds are all in one unison and one assembly for us to all suffer together manly. Religions are going to be divided, conquered, and merged into the beast system because at the end of the day, they are cowards because they do not want to prove their faith through works because they prove it through doctrine and tradition. This whole walk is supposed to make you uncomfortable so that you are obedient to the Most High and not obedient unto yourself. When you no longer are obedient unto yourself, that is when your world starts rocking. That is when you know you're on the ancient path and you're standing in the ancient way. When you're allowing yourself to be used by Yah and not you using yourself for your own gain, everything will be topsy-turvy for a time until you start to walk in the ways that He wants you to walk in for your glory and for His purpose and not yours. Wherefore do you, O children of Abraham, die nobly for your faith? Ye spear-bearers of the tyrant, why do ye linger, beholding him so high-minded against misery, and not changing at their pity, they led him to the fire. Then with their wickedly contrived instruments they burnt him on the fire, and poured stinking fluids down into his nostrils. And he, being at length burnt down to the bones, and about to expire, raised his eyes to Elohim ward, and said, You know, O Elohim, that when I might have been saved, I am slain for the sake of the Torah by tortures of fire. Be merciful to your people, and be satisfied with the punishment of me on their account. Let my blood be purification for them, and take my life in recompense for theirs. Thus speaking, the righteous man departed, noble in his torments, and even to the agonies of death resisted in his reasoning for the sake of the Torah. Confessed, therefore, observant reasoning is master of the passions. For had the passions been superior to reasoning, I would have given them the witness of this mastery. But now, since reasoning conquered the passions, we fittingly award it the authority of first place, and it is but fair that we should allow that the power belongs to reasoning, since it masters external miseries. Ridiculous it would be were it not so, and I prove that reasoning has not only mastered the pains, but that is also superior to the pleasures and withstands them. This is the temperance that's talked about in Scripture if you follow the Torah. This is why I know how much I am allowed to drink. This is how much I know how much I'm allowed to indulge. It teaches you moderation for those who have never had moderation in their life. This is why he goes after the lost sheep. Because growing up in this world, you weren't taught or taught moderation. You were taught to go as much as you can handle. And after a while, you build up stamina for things you're not supposed to handle. Whether it be emotional, physical, or mental abuse. You teach your brain like an algorithm to sustain certain traumas because that's all it's attached to. You teach yourself to be drunk every Saturday because that's what you're attached to. And you become strong in that wickedness. You become strong in that trauma. This is why a lot of us needed the Torah to start to learn temperance, moderation, and how to rule over our passions. Because that is obviously what people are suffering from in this generation. That their emotions, their passions are like a bottomless pit. That once you get into one perversion, you're going to keep going until you're satisfied, until you're full with sin. But it has no backstop. How many stories have we seen of men saying, all of a sudden saying they're gay, that they were born this way, and now they're saying that they were born to be women. And now when they're born to be women, now they think they can give birth. Or they think they can have menstrual cycles. It has no backstop. If you're into young women, it ain't much longer till you start being into children. And then you go from children into babies. They don't call them chicken lovers for no reason. That's the pedophilic name for those who like infants. I'm talking about children that are below the age of 3. They call them chicken lovers. Anytime you see a celebrity holding chickens or holding roosters or at a farm where they're doing something with chickens, that's their symbolism of saying that we like infants. If you remember Chrissy Teigen's tweets, it was almost about infants. The woman, Blazer, the comedian that was on Saturday Night Live, her monologue was literally about a 4-year-old taking a shower with a 4-year-old. Like I said, it's so mainstream, and this is, you know where exactly where it's going, and you know it's coming from that Babylonian Talmud. So it's no backstop to wickedness. But luckily, we have the fire. Now, I find it interesting that Eleazar didn't get waterboarded or drowned to death or thrown in the den of lions, but fire purged him for his glory. Fire. And so I go to scriptures that talk about fire being the element used to purge this world of wickedness. Now, I'm not saying Eleazar was wicked, but the reason why the Grecians came down and burnt everything up is because the Israelites, again, after time, got into wickedness and serving other nations and worshiping their gods. So the Most High is sending people just as horrible as the Persians, just as horrible as the Assyrians, just as horrible as the Babylonians, and bringing those nations down into Jerusalem and to destroy us, to prove his point. Like, you keep going with this, I'm going to continue to destroy you until you learn your lesson. The reason why we aren't being destroyed again, and reason why this is the last captivity, because the Most High has already seen that we would get the point. Finally, we would get the point. Yeshayahu 51, 4 through 6. Hearken unto me, my people, and give ear unto me, O my nation, for a Torah shall proceed from me, and I will make my judgment to rest for a light of the people. How can the Most High make his Torah, his judgment, a light of the people if he somewhat nailed it to the cross of his son? See, this is what I'm saying. When people chop these books up into Old and New Testament, which is a European invention, a concoction that they did so to make you disregard the prophecies of the Most High God and make a false Messiah, the Son God, Jesus Christ, as the all-creating God, and following him by two little commandments is all you need to make it to heaven. To lowering the ball so low that you only have to love your neighbor as much as you think loving your neighbor is, and only worshiping and doing God, which is only meaning doing the second commandment and thinking that satisfies the first commandment because you believe that these entities are all one thing. My righteousness is near, my Yeshua is gone forth, and my arms shall judge the people, the isles shall wait upon me, and on my arms shall they trust. Lift up your eyes to the heavens and look upon the earth beneath, for the heavens shall vanish away like smoke, and the earth shall wax old like a garment, and they that dwell therein shall die in like manner, so they shall die in the smoke, they shall vanish away through fire. But my Yeshua shall be forever, and my righteousness shall not be abolished or nailed to the cross. 4 Ezra 7, 60 and 61. So also will be the judgment which I have promised, for I will rejoice over the few who shall be saved, because it is they who have made my glory to prevail now, and through them my name has now been honored. How can we honor his name? By going through trials and tribulations in the midst of our enemies, giving us favor when our ways please the Most High Yah, that show these enemies, that show these people round about us, show these Gentiles that we do know and love the Most High Yahuwah, and that we are protected by the Most High Yah. We're not going to be able to exalt his name if we are trodden down and burned hotly like the rest of these nations. How is this making his name prevail? How is that honoring his name if we die like others, if we are not set apart like others? We have to first live through our works that we are separate, that we do follow and worship the Most High Yah. It will be shown through our walk. It will be shown through our grace. It will be shown through the hedge that's round about us through being upright. And I will not grieve over the multitude of those who perish, for it is they who are now like a mist and are similar to a flame and smoke, and they are set on fire and burn hotly and are extinguished. Again, it goes back to fire and smoke. This is the second time the Most High is saying, I'm about to torch everything. Revelation 9:18. By these three was the third part of men killed, by the fire and by the smoke and by the brimstone which issued out of their mouths. So when the Most High cracks open these seals and sends these angels to do his will, his pleasure, a third part of men will be killed by fire and by the smoke. So if the fire didn't get you, the smoke definitely will. So the Most High has used countless characters, countless images, countless examples of his word, his will coming to fruition, and how we should truly, truly unto death follow that Torah. It's not going to be a pleasant thought. Actually, it should be real embarrassing for you if you end up in the same place as Antiochus, if you end up the same place as Hitler, if you end up the same place as the KKK, if you end up the same place as any enemy that you have in your lifetime that you cannot stand or stand to be around. It'd be embarrassing for you if you cannot turn from your wicked ways, if you cannot turn from your pride and ego to follow the ancient paths, to follow the ancient ways, to sustain you, to preserve you, so you could be exalted in the place of your enemies. I mean, I feel for you. Because that's the only thing that's holding a lot of people back, is their pride and ego and changing themselves over. Because if you feel like you're self-righteous or righteous enough or good enough because you never had any real faults in this life, which is most people I know online, people who don't really do too much, never had a drug issue, never, you know, was beaten, never beat anybody, or never was a klepto, or never was in and out of prison, or in and out of boys' homes, and kind of had a monotonous, mundane life. These are the people who think nothing will ever happen to them, but they still do all the traditions of men, all the traditions of Babylon and Rome that are frowned against. They still believe by eating unclean foods and doing these traditions that nothing should ever happen to them because they've never done anything wrong in their mind. And then to find out they're going to be in the same place sharing eternity of torment by the fire, those who are twice as wicked than they have ever been their entire lives, only because of pride, ego, and disobedience to the Torah. So this is why I impose on people to read the Sefer and read all the books that were taken out and take away this stiff-neckedness and not reading anything else but the New Testament. The New Testament is good, yes, but you need to know why you need to guard these commandments. You need to know why these commandments matter, and you need to know why the unclean foods law matter. Just because we're not getting thrown in the fire for eating bacon or slipping up and eating bacon now does not mean we won't be thrown in the fire later for it, especially when we know the Torah. So see, right now, this is the season of wheat and tare. This is why they're not being plucked up. This is why the angels were told not to pluck them up until they are ripe, because you don't know which one's going to be which yet. So those who are wicked was almost at the same level as those who were somewhat righteous but still had wickedness in them. They were both growing the same, so you couldn't use the scythe to take them all out, because you might pull up the righteous with the wicked and those who are starting to turn over to their righteousness. This is why some of us are not destroyed. Do you understand that? This is why some of us throughout in our entire lives were not destroyed. We were corrected, but we were not destroyed for the sinful behaviors that we kept doing upon this earth. So once we come to the fullness of our fruit, the ripeness of our fruit, the ripeness of our righteousness, then you know it will be time for the harvest, when everyone is completely wicked, when everyone is completely separated from how we walk, when you can outright tell those who are following the laws and those who aren't following, you're going to see it. Once you know that, you can understand just by being around people that these people aren't following the way that we are following, it will be most evident who they're following. And you'll know, okay, this, we are definitely separate. We are definitely two types of plants. We two types plants, yeah. Two types of growths. I'm bearing fruit, you're not bearing any, because you're working for the system. And the more you work for the system, you cannot bear fruit for the Most High Yah. And it will be evident. Like I said, I follow some people I follow online just to see how far they're willing to go, if they're ever going to turn their life around to something else. That's why I'm just following people for the markers of when destruction starts to hit or starts to come up. It's going to be evident. Because people are going to be complaining. And once they start complaining, they're going to look for the answer. And the answer will be found in their own pride, in their own ego. And people are going to be so far gone consciously that they're not going to be like, oh, I need to repent. They're not. It's even mentioned in Revelation. After being tormented, after being stung for 5 months, people still won't repent because their minds be gone, their conscience seared. Because I'm pretty sure America will give an explanation as to why they're being stung. Like, oh, it's just an infestation. Oh, Bill Gates just made these computerized little mosquitoes that's stinging everybody. Don't worry. We'll turn it off soon. And the whole time it's in scripture. What will happen to people who don't repent? So choose for your life. Like it says, choose for yourself life or death. The blessing or the curse. That's in Deuteronomy. This should be easy for you. That doesn't mean you're not going to be tried for the Torah. It doesn't mean you're not going to be tried for your righteousness or your uprightness. Because I showed you examples. The Most High tried Abraham, tried Yitzchak, tried Yaakov, tried Eleazar, tried Daniel on the strength of the Torah, and were blessed and favored because they stood the test of time through it.